Slipped into the room, she was honestly hoping nobody would notice. She didn't want to be the center of attention. She had no need to draw any attraction to herself. In fact, she's another one of those folks in the Bible that we don't even know what her name was. All that Matthew tells us is this event took place in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper. Most theologians assume this woman could have been the sister of Lazarus, but more than likely was Simon the leper's wife or his sister or someone who was overwhelmed with gratitude because of the blessing of his healing. Simon had invited Jesus and his disciples to come to his home. They were in the dining room, sitting around the table, carrying on conversation. Now understand, this was a different time, a different place, and a different culture, and things were very different in the time of Jesus. So that around this table sat Jesus and his disciples and Simon and the men that he had invited, but women were not invited to be part of that gathering. They were not allowed to sit around the table, and they certainly were not allowed to participate in the conversation. From time to time, if the guest was someone of great renown, women would be allowed to come and stand around the edges of the room and listen quietly to the conversation that was taking place. This was a woman whose love and gratitude was not going to be denied, though. She came into the room with a plan of her own. She walked in carrying the most precious possession she had in the whole world. It was an alabaster jar that was filled with an aromatic ointment. This was something of great and rare value. In fact, this may very well have been a perfume that had been hers after her mother gave it to her. After her mother gave it to her. And so on and so on. It was a family treasure. She had never used it for herself. It was too costly, too precious for anything other than something incredibly important. But when she found out Jesus was coming to her house, she knew this is the time and this is how I need to use it. She would use it to anoint, to bless the Lord Jesus Christ. And so she waited for just the right moment. Perhaps there was a lull in the conversation. Maybe she thought, this is a time when I won't cause any real problems. And she opened the flask, and she poured it on his head, and the fragrance filled the room. The reaction to what she did was immediate and unpleasant. How dare you interrupt a dinner like this? What do you mean drawing attention to yourself? How could you use that fragrance so foolishly? Didn't you know that could have been sold and given to the poor? Accusations filled the air. She didn't know quite what to think. She hadn't expected this kind of a reaction. Her eyes filled with tears and her heart pounded. And she was filled with doubt. I thought I was doing the right thing. I believed I was doing what the Lord would want me to do. I wanted Jesus to know how truly grateful I am and how much I love him for what he's done. But instead of people understanding her, they were tearing her apart. All around the room, voices crying, accusing, how could you do this? Why would you do this? Don't you realize what the right thing to do is? Why shouldn't you? Why didn't you sell this? The world will do that to us all. Have you ever found yourself in a situation very much like that woman in Bethany where you thought you were doing the right thing, you thought you were saying the right thing, you thought you were acting in the right way, and all of a sudden everybody just kind of begins to tear you apart. And you begin to wonder if you knew what you were doing after all. You do the best you can. You try to treat people the way you should. Sometimes you try even extra hard to do what is right. But instead of being understood and affirmed, you get discouragement and criticism and misunderstanding. It's enough to make you want to give up. And I can imagine as those accusations flew, there came that moment when this woman bowed her head and averted her eyes from everybody, and all she could think about was, how can I get to the door and get myself out of here? But there was one. There was one in the room who did not join into the criticism. And that one was Jesus. He stepped in to change everything. Just when she was more discouraged than she had ever been, Christ transformed a very ugly moment into an experience of sheer grace. And he used this experience to bless her in such a way that by the time she left that room, she was no longer thinking about all the ways that people had torn her apart. Instead, she was remembering how she had been blessed. You see, Jesus used the third quality of a biblical blessing to touch her life. Over the last few weeks, we've been looking together at the five dimensions of a biblical blessing. The first week, we got together and we learned about meaningful touch, how important it is to have a special touch from people that we care about that is appropriate and affirming and loving, that makes a difference in your life. We demonstrated that just a few minutes ago in our greeting time. How special it is to have someone say, I know who you are, I see you there, and you reach out and you give them a hug, you shake the hand, you let them know they matter in your life. Last week we learned the second dimension of a biblical blessing, and that's the spoken word, where you take time and you very specifically say to people you love, this is what I think about you, this is how I feel about you, and you take time with your words to bless another person. This morning, through this story, I want to show you the third quality of a biblical blessing. And the third quality is this: we are to express high value. Meaningful touch, spoken words, expressing high value. The biblical concept of value is an important one for all of us to understand. When you talk about expressing value, well, sometimes we think of that word in a lot of ways. For instance, if we went to the store together today and I said to you, this is a great value, what would you think? It's cheap, inexpensive. It doesn't cost me very much. If we said to someone, I value your friendship, what does that mean? Means it's special. It's unique. It makes a difference in your life. But when the Bible talks about expressing value, when it talks about giving value to one another, it takes that idea and it takes it 1,000 times deeper. There's three things you need to know about the biblical idea of value. The first one is this: value finds its source in God. When the Bible talks about value, it talks about the fact that individuals, people are precious because they are God's creation. Not just God's creation, God's special creation, God's unique creation. You know, the God who knew you before you were conceived, who understands about every hair on your head, who cares for you more deeply than possible. We value one another. People are valuable because they're important to God. Second thing that the Bible talks about with value is simply this, and value reveals his unique purpose. Value says, this is God's plan for your life. You have a unique purpose. There are so many reasons as believers that we believe in the sanctity of life. So many reasons why, as believers, we hang on to the preciousness of the unborn. One of those reasons is because we believe that every time a creation is conceived, every time a human being is created, God has a purpose. And when that life is taken, that purpose disappears and it's never fulfilled. Value means it starts with God. Value means it has a purpose. And value is a quality that is given, not taken. When you express high value, you never are saying to someone else, why can't you make me feel better? Why can't you build me up? Why can't you encourage me? Instead, value is always a gift that you give away. If I ask you this morning, so how do you feel valued today? What has somebody done for you to make you feel valued? You know what the Bible would say? The Bible would say that's irrelevant. Doesn't really matter. What the Bible would say is, what have you done today to give value to somebody else? What have you done to enrich somebody else's life, to build somebody else, to encourage somebody else, to make somebody else know how special they are to the Lord? That's what value is all about. And Jesus wanted to give this woman the gift of value. So how did he offer this woman that gift of high value? Well, there's several things he did. The first thing is this: he recognized what she had done. Matthew says, when Jesus was aware of it. When Jesus was aware. Now, it's easy to ask, how could he not be aware? After all, one moment he's sitting there at dinner, the next moment something is pouring onto his hair and this fragrance is beginning to fill the room. How can you not be aware that something has just taken place? But the Bible was not talking about the circumstances. It was referring to the purpose behind it all. Jesus was aware of her gratitude, of her love, of her generosity. When Jesus was aware of it, it meant he understood why she did what she did. He recognized what she had done. He was not focused on what had happened, but rather on who had reached out to him. Here's what it means. It means in that moment, as her gift was given, as his head was anointed, Jesus was not paying attention to all the people around him. He only saw a woman reaching out to her Savior. In the midst of all that cacophony and all that criticism and all that ugliness, Jesus ignored everybody else and he zeroed in on that woman. He had this incredible ability to see the individual in the midst of the crowd. That's what you see throughout the Gospels. You'll see all of these times when Jesus is preaching to a multitude. There's a crowd gathered by the sea. People are flooding in to see him, to touch him, to be healed by him, to be taught by him. And yet somehow in the midst of it, throughout the Gospels, Jesus always has this incredible gift to pick out an individual who truly needs the touch and to focus just on them. And he was doing exactly that. He recognized what she had done. And so he focused on her. Second thing is this. He identified why she had done it. The voice of the Lord silenced everyone else in the room. Why do you trouble this woman? I don't think he said it softly. I don't think he said it quietly. I think he said it so everybody understood in the midst of all of this racket that Jesus was speaking. Why do you trouble this woman? Why are you criticizing, correcting, troubling this lady? And it shocked them into silence. You know why? Because up until the moment that Jesus spoke, everybody in that room assumed they were the good guys. She was the bad guy. They were doing everything right. She was the one that had gotten everything wrong. They believed that Jesus should be impressed by their show of concern, their piety, their concern for the poor. Jesus, we're doing everything right. We don't know how this woman made such a mistake. And suddenly he says, why do you trouble this woman? And then he declared, she has done a good work for me. Why do you trouble her? What she did was right. What did Jesus do? He flipped everything. She is right. You are wrong. She is good. You are bad. Because he understood why she had done what she had done. Why she had left her place on the wall. Why she had caused attention to be drawn to herself. Why she had used that expensive ointment to spread over the head of Jesus. Why had she done it? To bless the Lord. She had only one purpose when she broke that alabaster jar. And it was to bless the one who had blessed her life, to bless the one who meant so much to her. Her motive was not to impress others or cause a sensation. All she really knew was how grateful she was to Jesus. And the Lord wanted them to recognize the motive for everything she had done. She had anointed his head as a true act of worship. They had been in the presence of holiness. And they didn't even recognize it for what it was. He recognized what she'd done. He identified why she had done it. He revealed why it was so special. Jesus said something that must have just thrown all of them off kilter. He said, "In pouring this fragrant oil on my body, she did it for my burial." Burial? What's that all about? What does that mean? But Jesus knew more than anybody else what was taking place. The cross was directly before him. Neither she nor anyone else in that room truly realized that Jesus was on his way to his crucifixion. Her offering was more meaningful than she could possibly have imagined. You know, as I was working on this study the other day, I thought about the fact that it may very well be that as Jesus hung from the cross on that day when he died, there might have been a trace of that fragrance still in the air from a woman who had anointed him only days earlier. Nobody questioned what Jesus said. Maybe they didn't want to know. But in that statement, Jesus sanctified her gift. He said, "She is doing something that nobody else could do. This is an act of pure worship." Then finally, he affirmed the giver more than the gift. He did this by declaring, "Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." Jesus gave this woman the blessing of high value. He said, "I want to tell you how important what she's done has been. As long as the gospel is shared, as long as the word exists, until I return to take my own to heaven, people will remember this gift. People will remember what she has done. Instead of being an object of criticism, she would be the subject of a memorial." Because of what Jesus told them, everyone present realized they were with someone who had been blessed by the Savior. And every time they saw her for the rest of their lives, they would remember, here is that woman that Jesus singled out and blessed. He forever gave her the gift of high value. And we are called to follow his example. So here's the question this morning. So how can you offer that same sort of blessing? How can you offer the gift of high value? Because the truth is, there'll probably never be a moment in your life when you're sitting somewhere around a dinner table minding your business and all of a sudden somebody's going to pour perfume over your head. It's probably never going to happen to you. Generally, if I have something on my head, it means I've done something wrong, not something right. Somebody a while back, I've forgotten who I was talking to. Might have been somebody in this room. But they were saying, you know, so-and-so-so. We were just laughing. And they said, you know, your wife just needs to hit you with a frying pan. Or They said, I need to hit you with a frying pan. And I said, let me go home and get the dented one. Probably in your life, you may get a few dents. But you may not have anybody who's going to pour fragrance on your head. So how do you offer this blessing of high value to the people you love, to the people God puts in your way? How can you be sure your children understand how special they are? How can you let your wife know, your husband know, how much you love them and how precious they are in your life? How can you let the people around you that are a part of who you are, that are special to you, how can you give them a gift of high value? How do you bless people and build them up in Jesus' name? Let me suggest four things that you can do. Four things that are essential as a spouse, as a parent, as a grandparent, as a friend. These are four things that you can do to give the blessing of high value. Are you ready? The first thing is this: pay attention. Pay attention. Be aware of what people you love are doing that deserves to be praised. Pay attention and notice when those things are taking place. Because the truth is, sometimes we live in a world very much like that world in which Jesus found himself that night, where there are all kinds of voices and all kinds of issues and all kinds of things going on. And if you're not careful, all of those things will distract you from the things that matter the most. You can become so preoccupied with things that are here today and gone tomorrow that you don't notice the things that really matter. You get all caught up in something that seems so important at this moment, but if you ask about it next Tuesday, you won't even remember what it was. And yet it can be so time-consuming. It can captivate your mind in such a way that you don't see the things that really matter. Sometimes you don't realize when somebody is just waiting to be noticed, when somebody needs that word of high value, when somebody needs to be lifted up. Sometimes you just don't notice. Judith loves to tell the story about when our daughter Bethany was about 3 years old, and I was in the den and I was reading my newspaper. Remember newspapers? And I was reading it and I was absorbed in whatever it was I was reading, and Bethany wanted something from me, and she stood in front of my chair and she said, "Daddy, Daddy, 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 Daddy." Honest truth, I never heard her. Until finally she said, "Brother Jim." And I looked up. What? If we're not careful, we don't notice the things we need to see. You don't give attention to the people when there's something that needs to be done, nor do you give attention in those times when there's something that needs to be corrected. You just overlook those things and go on along your way. Make it a priority to be quick to notice things that deserve special attention. Make it a point that you're able to encourage, to build up, to recognize, to love people at just the time they need it the most. Now understand, I'm not saying only see the good stuff and overlook the other. Because there are times when correction needs to take place in a home. In fact, correction is one of the ways you bless your children. It's one of the ways you bless your families. We use correction when our kids are young to help them become the person they're going to be. It's pruning and trimming. That's what I think. Here's the Jim Cooley philosophy of doing discipline in your home in two sentences, okay? Decide the kind of adult that you're trying to raise. Do what you have to get them there. That's pretty much it. Decide the kind of adult that you want to have when they're 30 years old, and then work backwards. And that means you prune and you trim. There are things you build up. There are things you correct. There are things you snip off. There are things you do in order to help them become that person they ought to be. Just don't stop there. Don't stop by thinking my whole job at my house is correction. My whole job at my house is discipline. What I'm saying is simply this. Be diligent to find things to affirm, moments that deserve recognition. There are times when you're going to have to step in and you're going to have to correct. And sometimes you're going to have to step in and discipline. But also look for those times when you see your children doing good things and make sure you focus on those things. The tendency sometimes, not only with your children, but also with your spouse, is to say, okay, here's where I'm not pleased with you, so let's fix it. This is where you've let me down. This is how I'm disappointed. And we need to look much more deeply to find those things we can talk about that are affirmations and encouragements and attaboys and way to go. Look for the things that need recognition. Men, I'm saying this from experience. Don't be so quick to notice the burned rolls that you missed the perfect meal that's sitting beside it, because it'll get you in trouble. I heard someone say that our first priority is to try to catch other people doing something right. I like that. Your first priority is to catch people doing something right and brag about it. If you make a bigger deal over the mistakes than the victories, then you're not accomplishing what you need to accomplish. Be sure you see the victories along the way, and every now and then, deal with those mistakes that have to be handled. Look for things to affirm. Pay attention. Second thing, speak up. Speak up. Don't miss the opportunity to praise. Don't say about your family, "Oh, they know how I feel. I don't have to say it." Don't say, "I show my love by the things I do." Don't say, "I don't have to encourage because I've already done that." And don't be like the man whose wife said, "You know, you never tell me I love you anymore." And he said, "Well, I told you that when we got married. That's 25 years ago. If I ever change my mind, I'll let you know." Don't be that way. Speak up. Make sure to speak up and share affirmation and affection and praise. But here's the thing that makes the difference when you're given a gift of high value. Okay, are you listening? Make sure your encouragement is both specific and praiseworthy. What am I saying? I'm saying speak up and talk about specific things. When your encouragement is specific, you're building character into the people you love. You're establishing healthy boundaries in your world. You are saying, "Here are the things that are worthy of affirmation, and I want you to know I saw it. I saw what you were doing. I saw how you were acting. I saw how you treated others. I saw it." And speak up about it. Too many times we keep our mouths shut when we need to be speaking up the way Jesus did. Speaking up to affirm our family, speaking up to defend, speaking up to take care of, speaking up to encourage, speaking up to share love. Speak up. Speak up. Be clear. To give the gift of high value, you need to be clear in your affirmation. Generalized praise is nice, but clear praise offers the high value that all of us crave. Identify exactly what's been done, words that have been said, choices that have been made, and let those be the things you lift up to honor. It is one thing to say, "I am proud of you." It is another thing to say, "I am proud of you because of this specific thing." It's one thing to say, "I love everything about you." It's a better thing to say, "I love the way you do this or do that." You speak clearly. "This is what I love about you. This is what encourages me. This is why I want to bless you. Let me tell you about the good thing you've done and how it made me feel." Because those are the compliments, that's the praise that people remember. When you praise clearly, you're sending an important unspoken message. "You really matter to me. I've been watching what you do. I have seen the decisions that you made, and I am so proud of you." It means you care. It means you're watching. It means you appreciate positive decisions. Philippians 4:8 declares this: "Whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, think on these things." Now, what if we took that passage and used it as a guide for affirming the people in our lives, for blessing the people in our lives? I doubt if a day would ever pass when we would look at somebody we loved and say, "You know, I just can't think of anything good today." Not when you got your choice between true and noble and just and pure and lovely and good report and virtue and praise. Somewhere in there, there is something you can use to bless the people you love. I think if we use that passage, we would discover there are more things to bless than we could possibly recognize. To offer high value, you have to be clear and specific about why you are giving the gift of honor. One last thing, real quickly. And bless both publicly and privately. Sometimes the gift of high value is best given one-on-one. When you sit down with someone and you look them right in the eyes and you tell them, this is why I love you. This is why I'm proud of you. This is what I see in you. These are the ways I want to bless you. It's incredibly meaningful to be taken aside for praise. It offers a moment of total attention to a person who is being singled out. But often it's very meaningful when it's expressed in the presence of others. When you don't just say it in secret, you say it so everybody around can hear it. So everybody around knows what you think and how you feel. That doesn't mean you have to plan a recognition ceremony. You don't have to blow whistles and say, everybody come running because I'm about to bless this person. But it does mean that often the gift of value should be given in front of the family or among their peers. When you praise someone in front of others, it lifts their confidence and inspires them to do what they can to receive, to earn high value. And hear this. And often you can give the gift of high value to someone when they aren't even there, just by the way you talk about them. Some of the highest value comes when someone learns about or overhears you lifting them up when they're not around to hear what you're saying. You know what I mean? When word gets back around to somebody, yeah, your mom was talking about you the other day. Yeah, your dad was bragging about you. I heard what your wife was saying about the way you were helping out around the house. I heard what your husband was saying about the way you made sure he knew how special he was. When you hear about it secondhand, what a blessing that is. What a blessing to know, even when I'm not around, you still care about me. Some of the best advice I ever heard for husbands and wives is this. When you're away from them, when you're in a gathering of friends or family or whoever else, don't ever take that time as an opportunity to tear them down. Don't ever use that as an opportunity to say, my husband just doesn't understand. My wife's never where I want her to be. You know, my kids, so-and-so, so-and-so. Instead, they said, this is the thing to do. When you're away from the people you love and you're talk about them in such a way that when you leave, the people you've been with begin to say, boy, I wish I was married to somebody like that. I wish I had that kind of parent. I wish it was that way in my life. Make sure that you build them up publicly and privately. Long ago, Jesus gave the blessing of high value to a woman who anointed him in Bethany. He's still giving that blessing today. Even today, he singles people out and lets them know one by one, person by person, you are special. You are precious in my sight. I died just for you. And I want you to experience everlasting life. So here's my question. What about you? Individually, personally, have you experienced the eternal life that Jesus has offered you? Maybe you're here today and you know that's something you need. And you also know he's already been talking to you about it. Not here, but here. And you recognize it's time for you to become a believer. Maybe today is a day for you to come. Or maybe you're here today and you're recognizing, you know, one of the ways God's blessing my life is through this church. And I want to be a part of this. I want to join this church. I want to plant myself in this place. I want to bless and be blessed by the folks that are part of this church family. Maybe there's another decision you need to make. We're going to stand and sing an invitation hymn. This will be your opportunity to come If God's speaking to you, don't put it off for another time. You come today. Let's stand together. Let's sing.